Chapter 7. The government of God, considered as a scheme or constitution, imperfectly comprehended. Though it be acknowledged, as it cannot but be, that the analogy of nature gives a strong credibility to the general doctrine of religion and to the several particular things contained in it, considered as so many matters of fact, and likewise that it shows this credibility not to be destroyed by any notions of necessity, still, objections may be insisted upon against the wisdom, equity, and goodness of the divine government implied in the notion of religion and against the method by which this government is conducted, to which objections analogy can be no direct answer. For the credibility or the certain truth of a matter of fact does not immediately prove anything concerning the wisdom or goodness of it. And analogy can do no more, immediately or directly, than show such and such things to be true or credible, considered only as matters of fact. But if upon supposition of a moral constitution of nature and a moral government over it, analogy suggests and makes it credible that this government must be a scheme, system, or constitution of government, as distinguished from a number of single unconnected acts of distributive justice and goodness, and likewise, that it must be a scheme so imperfectly comprehended and of such a sort in other respects as to afford a direct general answer to all objections against the justice and goodness of it, then analogy is, remotely, of great service in answering those objections, both by suggesting the answer and showing it to be a credible one. Now, this, upon inquiry, will be found to be the case. For, first, upon supposition that God exercises a moral government over the world, the analogy of his natural government suggests and makes it credible that his moral government must be a scheme quite beyond our comprehension. And this affords a general answer to all objections against the justice and goodness of it. Secondly, a more distinct observation of some particular things contained in God's scheme of natural government, the like things being supposed by analogy to be contained in his moral government, will further show how little weight is to be laid upon these objections. Upon supposition that God exercises a moral government over the world, the analogy of his natural government suggests and makes it credible that his moral government must be a scheme quite beyond our comprehension, and this affords a general answer to all objections against the justice and goodness of it. It is most obvious, analogy renders it highly credible, that upon supposition of a moral government, it must be a scheme. For the world, and the whole natural government of it, appears to be so, to be a scheme, system, or constitution, whose parts correspond to each other, and to a whole, as really as any work of art, or as any particular model of a civil constitution and government. In this great scheme of the natural world, individuals have various peculiar relations to other individuals of their own species. Whole species are, we find, variously related to other species upon this earth. Nor do we know how much further these kinds of relations may extend. And, as there is not any action or natural event which we are acquainted with, so single and unconnected as not to have a respect to some other actions and events, so possibly each of them, when it is not an immediate, may yet have a remote natural relation to other actions and events much beyond the compass of this present world. There seems indeed nothing from whence we can so much as make a conjecture whether all creatures, actions, and events throughout the whole of nature have relations to each other. But as it is obvious that all events have future unknown consequences, so if we trace any event as far as we can into what is connected with it, we shall find that if it were not connected with something further in nature, unknown to us, something both past and present, such event could not possibly have been at all. Nor can we give the whole account of any one thing whatever, of all its causes, ends, and necessary adjuncts, those adjuncts, I mean, without which it could not have been. By this most astonishing connection, these reciprocal correspondences and mutual relations, everything which we see in the course of nature is actually brought about. Things seemingly the most insignificant imaginable are perpetually observed to be necessary conditions to other things of the greatest importance, so that any one thing whatever may, for aught we know to the contrary, be a necessary condition to any other. The natural world, then, and natural government of it being such an incomprehensible scheme, so incomprehensible that a man must really, in the literal sense, know nothing at all who is not sensible of his ignorance in it. This immediately suggests and strongly shows the credibility that the moral world and government of it may be so too. Indeed, the natural and moral constitution and government of the world are so connected as to make up together but one scheme. And it is highly probable that the first is formed and carried on merely in subserviency to the latter, as the vegetable world is for the animal, and organized bodies for minds. But the thing intended here is, without inquiring how far the administration of the natural world is subordinate to that of the moral, only to observe the credibility that one should be analogous or similar to the other, that therefore every act of divine justice and goodness may be supposed to look much beyond itself and its immediate object, may have some reference to other parts of God's moral administration and to a general moral plan, and that every circumstance of this, his moral government may be adjusted beforehand with a view to the whole of it. For example, the determined length of time and the degrees and ways in which virtue is to remain in a state of warfare and discipline, and in which wickedness is permitted to have its progress, the times appointed for the execution of justice, the appointed instruments of it, the kinds of rewards and punishments, and the manners of their distribution. All particular instances of divine justice and goodness, and every circumstance of them, may have such respects to each other as to make up altogether a whole, connected and related in all its parts. A scheme or system, which is as properly such as the natural world is, and of the like kind. Supposing this to be the case, it is most evident that we are not competent judges of this scheme from the small parts of it which come within our view in the present life. Therefore, no objections against any of these parts can be insisted upon by reasonable men. This, our ignorance, and the consequence here drawn from it, are universally acknowledged upon other occasions, and though scarce denied, yet are universally forgot when persons come to argue against religion. And it is not perhaps easy, even for the most reasonable men, always to bear in mind the degree of our ignorance and make due allowances for it. Upon these accounts, it may not be useless to go a little further in order to show more distinctly how just an answer our ignorance is to objections against the scheme of providence. Suppose, then, a person boldly to assert that the things complained of, the origin and continuance of evil, might easily have been prevented by repeated interpositions, interpositions so guarded and circumstanced as would preclude all mischief arising from them. Or, if this were impracticable, that a scheme of government is itself an imperfection, since more good might have been produced, without any scheme, system, or constitution at all, by continued single unrelated acts of distributive justice and goodness, because these would have occasioned no irregularities. Farther than this, it is presumed the objections will not be carried. Yet the answer is obvious, that were these assertions true, still the observations above concerning our ignorance in the scheme of divine government and the consequence drawn from it would hold in great measure, enough to vindicate religion against all objections from the disorders of the present state. Were these assertions true, yet the government of the world might be just and good notwithstanding, for at the most they would infer nothing more than that it might have been better. But they are mere arbitrary assertions, no man being sufficiently acquainted with the possibilities of things to bring any proof of them to the lowest degree of probability. For however possible what is asserted may seem, yet many instances may be alleged in things much less out of our reach of suppositions absolutely impossible and reducible to the most palpable self-contradictions, which not everyone would perceive to be such, nor perhaps anyone at first sight suspect. From these things it is easy to see distinctly how our ignorance, as it is the common, so it is really a satisfactory answer to all objections against the justice and goodness of providence. If a man, contemplating any one providential dispensation, which had no relation to any others, should object, that he discerned in it a disregard to justice or a deficiency of goodness, nothing would be less an answer to such objection than our ignorance in other parts of providence, or in the possibilities of things, no way related to what he was contemplating. But when we know not but the part objected against may be relative to other parts unknown to us, and when we are unacquainted with what is, in the nature of the thing, practicable in the case before us, then our ignorance is a satisfactory answer, because some unknown relation or some unknown impossibility may render what is objected against just and good, nay, good in the highest practicable degree. 2. How little weight is to be laid upon such objections will further appear by a more distinct observation of some particular things contained in the natural government of God, the like to which may be supposed, from analogy, to be contained in his moral government. First, as in the scheme of the natural world, no ends appear to be accomplished without means, so we find that means very undesirable, often conduce to bring about ends in such a measure desirable as greatly to overbalance the disagreeableness of the means. And in cases where such means are conducive to such ends, it is not reason, but experience, which shows us that they are thus conducive. Experience also shows many means to be conducive and necessary to accomplish ends, which means, before experience, we should have thought, would have had even a contrary tendency. From these observations relating to the natural scheme of the world, the moral being supposed analogous to it, arises a great credibility that the putting our misery in each other's power to the degree it is, and making men liable to vice to the degree we are, and in general, that those things which are objected against the moral scheme of providence may be, upon the whole, friendly and assistant to virtue and productive of an overbalance of happiness. I.e., the things objected against may be means by which an overbalance of good will in the end be found produced. And from the same observations, it appears to be no presumption against this that we do not, if indeed we do not, see those means to have any such tendency, or that they seem to us to have a contrary one. Thus, those things which we call irregularities may not be so at all, because they may be means of accomplishing wise and good ends more considerable. It may be added, as above, that they may also be the only means by which these wise and good ends are capable of being accomplished. It may be proper to add, in order to obviate an absurd and wicked conclusion from any of these observations, that though the constitution of our nature, from whence we are capable of vice and misery, may, as it undoubtedly does, contribute to the perfection and happiness of the world, and though the actual permission of evil may be beneficial to it, i.e., it would have been more mischievous, not that a wicked person had himself abstained from his own wickedness, but that anyone had forcibly prevented it, than that it was permitted. Yet notwithstanding, it might have been much better for the world if this very evil had never been done. Nay, it is most clearly conceivable that the very commission of wickedness may be beneficial to the world, and yet that it would be infinitely more beneficial for men to refrain from it. For thus, in the wise and good constitution of the natural world, there are disorders which bring their own cures, diseases which are themselves remedies. Many a man would have died had it not been for the gout or a fever, yet it would be thought madness to assert that sickness is a better or more perfect state than health, though the like, with regard to the moral world, has been asserted. Secondly, the natural government of the world is carried on by general laws. For this there may be wise and good reasons, the wisest and best, for aught we know to the contrary, and that there are such reasons is suggested to our thoughts by the analogy of nature, by our being made to experience good ends to be accomplished, as indeed all the good which we enjoy is accomplished by this means, viz. That the laws by which the world is governed are general. We have scarce any kind of enjoyments, but what we are, in some way or other, instrumental in procuring ourselves by acting in a manner which we foresee likely to procure them. Now this foresight could not be at all, were not the government of the world carried on by general laws, and though, for aught we know to the contrary, every single case may be, at length, found to have been provided for even by these, yet to prevent all irregularities, or remedy them as they arise by the wisest and best general laws, may be impossible in the nature of things, as we see it is absolutely impossible in civil government. But then we are ready to think that, the constitution of nature remaining as it is, and the course of things being permitted to go on, in other respects as it does, There might be interpositions to prevent irregularities, though they could not have been prevented or remedied by any general laws. There would indeed be reason to wish, which, by the way, is very different from a right to claim, that all irregularities were prevented or remedied by present interpositions, if these interpositions would have no other effect than this. But it is plain they would have some visible and immediate bad effects. For instance, they would encourage idleness and negligence, and they would render doubtful the natural rule of life, which is ascertained by this very thing, that the course of the world is carried on by general laws. And further, it is certain they would have distant effects, and very great ones too, by means of the wonderful connections before mentioned, so that we cannot so much as guess what would be the whole result of the interpositions desired. It may be said, any bad result might be prevented by further interpositions whenever there was occasion for them. But this, again, is talking quite at random and in the dark. Upon the whole, then, we see wise reasons why the course of the world should be carried on by general laws and good ends accomplished by this means, and for aught we know, there may be the wisest reasons for it, and the best ends accomplished by it. We have no ground to believe that all irregularities could be remedied as they arise, or could have been precluded by general laws. We find that interpositions would produce evil and prevent good, and for aught we know, they would produce greater evil than they would prevent, and prevent greater good than they would produce. And if this be the case, then the not interposing is so far from being a ground of complaint that it is an instance of goodness. This is intelligible and sufficient, and going further seems beyond the utmost reach of our faculties. It may be said that, after all, these supposed impossibilities and relations are what we are unacquainted with, and we must judge of religion, as of other things, by what we do know, and look upon the rest as nothing. Or however that the answers here given to what is objected against religion may equally be made use of to invalidate the proof of it, since their stress lies so very much upon our ignorance. But, first, though total ignorance in any matter does indeed equally destroy, or rather preclude, all proof concerning it and objections against it, yet partial ignorance does not. For we may in any degree be convinced that a person is of such a character, and consequently will pursue such ends, though we are greatly ignorant what is the proper way of acting in order the most effectually to obtain those ends. And in this case, objections against his manner of acting, as seemingly not conducive to obtain them, might be answered by our ignorance, though the proof that such ends were intended might not at all be invalidated by it. Thus, the proof of religion is a proof of the moral character of God, and consequently that his government is moral, and that everyone upon the whole shall receive according to his deserts, a proof that this is the designed end of his government. But we are not competent judges what is the proper way of acting in order the most effectually to accomplish this end. Therefore, our ignorance is an answer to objections against the conduct of Providence in permitting irregularities as seeming contradictory to this end. Now, since it is so obvious that our ignorance may be a satisfactory answer to objections against a thing, and yet not affect the proof of it, till it can be shown, it is frivolous to assert that our ignorance invalidates the proof of religion as it does the objections against it. Secondly, suppose unknown impossibilities and unknown relations might justly be urged to invalidate the proof of religion as well as to answer objections against it, and that, in consequence of this, the proof of it were doubtful. Still, let the assertion be despised or let it be ridiculed, it is undeniably true that moral obligations would remain certain, though it were not certain what would, upon the whole, be the consequences of observing or violating them. For these obligations arise immediately and necessarily from the judgment of our own mind, unless perverted, which we cannot violate without being self-condemned, and they would be certain too from considerations of interest. For though it were doubtful what will be the future consequences of virtue and vice, yet it is, however, credible that they may have those consequences which religion teaches us they will. And this credibility is a certain obligation in point of prudence to abstain from all wickedness and to live in the conscientious practice of all that is good. Thirdly, The answers above given to the objections against religion cannot be made use of to invalidate the proof of it. For, upon suspicion that God exercises a moral government over the world, analogy does most strongly lead us to conclude that this moral government must be a scheme or constitution beyond our comprehension. 1,000 particular analogies show us that parts of such a scheme, from their relation to other parts, may conduce to accomplish ends which we should have thought they had no tendency to accomplish, nay, ends which before experience we should have thought such parts were contradictory to and had a tendency to prevent. Therefore, all these analogies show that the way of arguing made use of in objecting against religion is delusive, because they show it is not at all incredible that could we comprehend the whole, we should find the permission of the disorders objected against to be consistent with justice and goodness, and even to be instances of them. Now, this is not applicable to the proof of religion, as it is to the objections against it, and therefore cannot invalidate that proof, as it does these objections. Lastly, from the observation now made, it is easy to see that the answers above given to the objections against providence, though in a general way of speaking, they may be said to be taken from our ignorance, yet are by no means taken merely from that, but from something which analogy shows us concerning it. For analogy shows us positively that our ignorance in the possibilities of things and the various relations in nature renders us incompetent judges, and leads us to false conclusions in cases similar to this, in which we pretend to judge and to object, so that the things above insisted upon are not mere suppositions of unknown impossibilities and relations, but they are suggested to our thoughts, and even forced upon the observation of serious men, and rendered credible too by the analogy of nature. Therefore, to take these things into the account is to judge by experience and what we do know, and it is not judging so to take no notice of them.